SBS live streams and podcasts are supported by advertising.
SBS is Australia's most trusted multilingual broadcaster. Our listeners are loyal, highly engaged, and have supported countless local businesses. We offer advertising packages for businesses of all sizes. Our experienced sales team will guide you through the process of owning a great campaign. Bring your own ad or have our production team make you something in one of our 68 languages. Start the conversation with your new audience today. Email sales@sbs.com.au.
I'm joined by His Excellency Anu De Tong, the chairman of the Pacific Elders Voice and former president of Kiribati, in the sidelines of a just wrapped visit to the Torres Strait Islands at the invitation of Saibai and Boigu Island elders who are seeking a court order to force further cuts to carbon emissions in line with the best available scientific evidence. Your Excellency, first, thanks for accepting our invitation and welcome to NITV Radio.
Thank you, and I thank you for inviting me.
Now, you're backing the traditional owners as they take the government to court. Why are you supporting them in this action, especially taking the government to court?
The campaign, the advocacy that I've been working on for decades, in which the Pacific Elders Voice has been supporting, is the reduction in emissions. And this case is about the reduction in emissions. And we did, in fact, visit Australia towards the end of last year to discuss that very issue. As an incoming government, we thought we'd be able to make an input into the new policy formulation at the very early stages. And one of the issues we did discuss was how Australia might be more proactive in cutting its emissions. And of course, here I'm not simply talking about the domestic emissions, but in particular focusing on the high volume of exports of fossil fuel, which Australia is exporting to other countries, which of course contributes to the global emissions.
I've seen the call by the two elders, Paul Kabai and Pabai Pabai. Their message is really, really alarming. They say that in a few years' time, especially considering the effects of climate change, the effects are already being felt deeply on the islands. The water line is rising. Their cemeteries, which are the resting place of their people, are being washed away by rising waters. And you say the similarities with other Pacific nations are very, very striking. Can you tell us what the situation is, especially on Kiribati?
What I saw in Saibai and Boigu were really not very different from our own experience. I did, in fact, share with the elders the video which I took early this year of my own home. The waves coming over the seawall and onto my front door. And so these are the realities that we are living with. And it was, for me, it was a very interesting experience to see that it's not only us in the center of the Pacific, but there are, in fact, other communities on the fringes of the Pacific and on the north of one of the more developed countries in the world. And it's an interesting experience. We are facing very, very similar challenges.
Yeah, you said you've been involved with these communities for a while now, an involvement spanning from the last government and the current one. What main changes have you seen since the change of leadership in our country? Is the new leadership more proactive, or is it just business as usual?
Definitely, the new government is a lot more proactive. That's definitely the case. The commitment to cut emissions to zero by 2050 is certainly a very positive step. But there seems to continue to be hesitation in going further than that. And this was an issue that we did raise with the members of the government when we came in September last year, how Australia might be able to cut the emissions which it exports to other countries. And, that is quite significant in our discussion. There doesn't appear to be any clear roadmap for transitioning from that. We understand the high dependence of Australia on the revenues derived from those exports, but the question really, how sincere, how genuine are we in trying to transition? And especially if there doesn't appear to be a clear plan to transition from that dependence away from the revenue derived from the export of fossil fuels. But of course, If I may add, you know, what's been the most disappointing aspect of the climate change debate has been the politicization of climate change. Over the years that I've been visiting and coming through Australia, that I've been monitoring other events around the world, it's been most disappointing to see the changes in administration, along with the changes on policy on climate change. We have seen it here in Australia. We have seen it in New Zealand. We saw it in United States and no doubt other countries. And that is disappointing. Climate change is not an issue of politics. It's really an issue of survival.
And just to play the devil's advocate, the government might argue that their coffers are empty. They need revenue from fossil fuels for many other things more than ever. They need the money to fund really urgent things like defense, social security, infrastructure development, and so on.
So they'll keep digging and selling these fossil fuels and coal, digging coal out of the ground. And
yes, I understand. Of course, expenses like a $368 billion expenditure on a huge militarization program. And this is the issue that's been, what are the major security concerns of our region? And of course, in the Pacific, it's been climate change, not so much the rivalry between the superpowers, okay? And so we saw how difficult it had been to come up with the resources, yet we saw how easy it was to dish it out on an issue, the purchase of nuclear submarines. And that is, we have to try and understand that.
And now you've lent your support to the two elders, helping raise their concern on a larger scale. How will this support translate beyond the recent declaration?
You know, it's got to be very clear that this is not a new initiative on our part. I think we've been advocating for our own case in the Pacific. We've been advocating for the case of the countries on the front line of the impacts of climate change. My visit to the Torres Island, Strait Islands, is, of course, I think it brings home to me the reality that we're not really the only communities being threatened. And I think it really broadens the scope and the kind of challenge that we are facing here as a global community. It's much, much wider than just us in the Pacific, and we truly understand that. And to have the similar challenges being faced by a community which is being looked after by one of the most developed countries in the world, and of course their own action and taking their own government to court, I think we would have liked to do that because we see this as a gross injustice. The question was, who should we take to court? And of course, I'm sure you're aware that the Vanuatu, together with the Pacific Island countries and a good number of the countries in the world, are taking the issue to the International Court of Justice, just simply as for an advisory opinion at this stage. But it's all about seeking justice, because on the issue like climate change, there doesn't appear to be anybody to blame directly, because it's a slow onset. Nobody responsible seems to be responsible, and that is the problem. And so bringing in communities in the Torres Strait Islands, I think, will only adds to a real understanding of the magnitude of the problem, how far wide-reaching it is. And so hopefully in the future, we would work together with these communities to tell the world, the global communities, those responsible for perpetuating this, that this is real, that it is a huge moral challenge, and they really need to step forward. Otherwise, our world will be gone.
Yeah, you've been a long-time advocate for climate change for many years, especially during your tenure as president of Kiribati. I remember seeing you making very powerful presentations at the COP21 in Paris and other forums in Morocco leading up to the next COP conference alongside the president of Palau and other leaders. You were truly a trailblazer in this space, but how has your country evolved in this space since you left office? Have they followed in your footsteps, or just like in Australia, there's just some kind of
back and forth?
Yeah, that's extremely disappointing. There was also a bit of politicking. I think sometimes we politicize things which really are so critically important for our future generations. And that was sad. I was extremely sad. But I'm glad it's coming around now that we are coming to terms with the reality of what we are facing. And, you know, it's such a tragedy that we can politicize an issue which is so critical. Why I've been so not obsessed, I think close to being obsessed, because it truly is very personal to me, as I'm sure it's very personal for many, many other people who would bother to have the vision to see into the future, see what is happening on the ground today at home, see what's happening on the ground in different parts of the world. Here in Australia, you're seeing events which you never witnessed before and in the frequency that you did not expect. And so that should sound a very sound loud alarm for some action to be made. I've got grandchildren, and it's about ensuring that they do have a future. At the moment, with the predictions being put forward by the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, our islands will be underwater by 2060. In 2007, by the fourth assessment report, it was by the end of the century. Now we are seeing it moving forward because action that needs to be taken to avoid this is not being taken. And that is so sad. But I think it's about the reality of what's coming. And unfortunately, not so many people can have the vision to extrapolate the what is happening on the ground, read the science, and then extrapolate into the future and see what it might be like in 2060 or beyond that, or even before that. I see the real possibility of home islands not being inevitable in 20 years' time. And the question is, how do we deal with this? Okay. So unless we can come up with plans, radical plans for adapting to remain above the rising seas, I'm afraid that the next option for us might be to relocate somewhere else.
Yeah. And becoming environmental refugees is the biggest concern expressed by traditional owners. And that is illustrated in the documentary they released ahead of the announcement that you're supporting their call to action. If worse comes to us, we can say that they'll be resettled on the mainland. Where would the citizens of Kiribati find a refuge in the event of a climate catastrophe?
Well, I really, quite frankly, I don't have the answer to that. I would have liked to been able to say during my terms in office, I would have liked to been able to come back from one of the international conferences that I attend and say, don't you worry, when the seas rise and when the storms get stronger, stronger, we will be able to survive. This is the plan. We would raise our islands. We would live on floating islands or whatever it is. But quite frankly, the international community has not focused on the beyond the floods, okay? We keep talking about cutting emissions and finding our way around those, you know, just fiddling with the numbers and the terminology. But we never really have focused on what is coming, what the real consequences would be for people. And I think it's about time to answer the question that you've just recently raised. You know, where do we go when it all comes down? And I assure you, there is no plan by the international community to deal with that. And during my time in office, I had to devise a plan, come up with radical, somewhat, crazy ideas about building this, bringing in floating islands, raising the islands, and maybe a policy of migration with dignity. It's all about trying to respond to this challenge, which is, it's an unprecedented challenge. It's going to change the nature of the world as we see it, as we know it today. And I think we've got to be prepared for that.
Your Excellency, before we part, any final thoughts?
Well, I simply would like to say that I hope we can look at this challenge with moral eyes, perspectives, rather than it's about me. We've got to learn to look beyond ourselves. And I think this is why I've always referred to climate change as the greatest challenge for humanity. So it's going to test our humanity into the future.
Your Excellency, thank you very much for taking the time to talk to us on NITV Radio today.
Thank you.
Need a few minutes to reset? Great Minds is a podcast from SBS that guides you through different meditation styles from around the world. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.